Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, March 7th. So, are we having fun yet? And how about that honeymoon? Many of us are beyond being frustrated these days. The number one issue is the banks, yet President Barack Obama appears to be interested in solving everything else but getting to work on this paramount problem. As George Will commented, this is like performing a heart transplant while the patient is running a marathon. We learned this week that the unemployment rate for February hit 8.1% as another 651,000 lost their jobs. Coupled with steep revisions downward for December to a level of 681,000, the worst since October 1949 and January, the economy has now shed 2.6 million jobs the past 4 months and 4.4 million since December 2007, when the recession officially started. We've also seen shares in Citigroup trade below $1, General Motors to below $1.50, its lowest level since 1933, and General Electric at sub $6, the lowest since 1993. And the Dow Jones and S&P at 12-year lows. Warren Buffett said the economy will be in shambles throughout 2009 and, for that matter, probably well beyond, but that conclusion does not tell us whether the stock market will rise or fall. Stephen Roach, chairman of Morgan Stanley Asia. Any whiffs of growth are likely to herald a false dawn because the consumer remains in terrible shape. American families live beyond their means for more than a decade by borrowing against their overvalued homes. With both the housing and credit bubbles having burst, their stock portfolios down and their jobs threatened, consumers have been shocked into a new frugality. They are likely to be restrained for years to come. The consumption share of gross domestic product is still 71%, down from a peak of 72%, but well above the 67% that prevailed from 1975 to 2000. Roach continues, this points to an unusually anemic upturn at best, but not strong enough to keep the unemployment rate from rising to near 10% over the next year and a half. Since it's hard to call that a recovery, it looks to me as if this recession won't end until late 2010 or early 2011. Niall Ferguson, Harvard professor, said this is a crisis of excessive debt. The end of the age of leverage. It will take longer than a few more months to resolve bank and household insolvency, especially with asset prices continuing to fall so rapidly. This recession is taking place as the rest of the world is doing even worse than the United States. The collapse of trade, as measured by East Asian export data, is petrifying. So far in this recession, remember, we have had only two consecutive quarters of declining gross domestic product. At the moment, I find it quite easy to imagine two consecutive years of contraction. And I don't rule out two more lean years after then. Economist Nouriel Roubini. Today, as we enter the 15th month, it's obvious that we are already in a painful U-shaped recession that has become global and will last at least until the end of the year. 24 months, the longest since the Great Depression. Even if the gross domestic product grows in 2010, it is likely to be no higher than 1%. And at that rate, with the unemployment rate rising toward 10%, we will be substantially in a recession. And things could get worse. We now face a 1 in 3 chance that, if appropriate policies are not put in place, this ugly U-shaped recession may turn into a more virulent L-shaped near depression or stag deflation, a deadly combination of economic stagnation and price deflation, like the one Japan experienced in the 1990s after its real estate and equity bubbles burst. That was Nouriel Roubini. It's about a total loss of confidence, not only in the markets, but in our government, at least among market participants. Paul Krugman wrote in the New York Times, last month in his big speech to Congress, President Obama argued for bold steps to fix America's dysfunctional banks. While the cost of action will be great, he declared, I can assure you that the cost of inaction will be far greater. For it could result in an economy that sputters along for not months or years, but perhaps a decade. Many analysts agree, but among people I talk to, there's a growing sense of frustration, even panic, over Mr. Obama's failure to match his words with deeds. The reality is that when it comes to dealing with the banks, the Obama administration is dithering. Policy is stuck in a holding pattern. Here's how the pattern works. First, administration officials, usually speaking off the record, float a plan for rescuing the banks in the press. This trial balloon is quickly shot down by informed commentators. Then, a few weeks later, the administration floats a new plan. This plan is, however, just a thinly disguised version of the previous plan, a fact quickly realized by all concerned, and the cycle starts again. Why do officials keep offering plans that nobody else finds credible? Because somehow top officials in the Obama administration and at the Federal Reserve have convinced themselves that troubled assets, often referred to these days as toxic waste, are really worth much more than anyone is actually willing to pay for them, and that if these assets were properly priced, all our troubles would go away. Paul Krugman continues, "The answer, I fear, is that officials still aren't willing to face the facts. They don't want to face up to the dire state of major financial institutions because it's very hard to rescue an essentially insolvent bank without, at least temporarily, taking it over. And temporary nationalization is still apparently considered unthinkable. But this refusal to face the facts means, in practice, an absence of action. And I share the president's fears. Inaction could result in an economy that sputters along not for months or years, but for a decade or more." That was Paul Krugman in the New York Times. Charles Krauthammer, Washington Post. "And yet, with our financial house on fire, Obama makes clear, both in his speech and his budget, that the essence of his presidency will be the transformation of healthcare, education, and energy. 4 months after winning the election, 6 months after swearing in, Obama has yet to unveil a plan to deal with the banking crisis. What's going on? You never want a serious crisis to go to waste," said Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel. "This crisis provides the opportunity for us to do things that you could not do before." Krauthammer. "Things, now we know what they are. The market's recent precipitous decline is a reaction not just to the absence of any plausible bank rescue plan, but also to the suspicion that Obama sees the continuing financial crisis as usefully creating the psychological conditions, the sense of crisis bordering on fear itself panic, for enacting his Big Bang agenda to federalize and or socialize healthcare, education, and energy, the commanding heights of post-industrial society. Clever politics, but intellectually dishonest to the core. Health, education, and energy, worthy and weighty as they may be, are not the cause of our financial collapse, and they are not the cure. The fraudulent claim that they are both cause and cure is the rhetorical device by which an ambitious president intends to enact the most radical agenda of social transformation seen in our lifetime." That was Charles Krauthammer. So, what's happening around the world? John Lipsky, first managing director of the IMF. "Our calculations suggest that the fall in global GDP in the fourth quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year is the sharpest we can find in post-war records. A forceful policy response is both warranted and justified. The emerging consensus is that it looks as if the downturn in the advanced economies will run through this year and into next year." The IMF is close to announcing that global growth in 2009 will go negative, rather than the small increase it had been forecasting. Deflation is increasingly a concern, particularly with private sector wages. Meanwhile, the Bank of England and the European Central Bank once again lower their core lending rates to record low levels, 0.5% and 1.5%, respectively. As the Euro nation saw a key manufacturing index for February, the PMI, hit the 33.5 level, 50 being the dividing line between growth and contraction. Property prices across Europe were falling in every market by the end of 2008. As one analysis notes, core markets are set to suffer marked downturns in 2009. Author of the study, Professor Michael Ball, said, "There is growing synchronization of housing market declines in Europe than has been seen in the past, and there are going to be some tough times before marked recovery occurs." The 27 nations comprising the European Union have a myriad of problems, the biggest of which being the lack of institutional mechanisms for addressing individual issues, a la, say, the U.S. Federal Reserve's many weapons. The EU is in many respects still in the formation stage, and importantly, the member states continue to cling to history. So just when they can least afford it, they are beginning to face off and reveal ugliness not seen since both World War II and the Cold War. Hungary's prime minister warned of a new Iron Curtain, while old members such as Germany and France wonder how far they want to go in helping nations on the verge of imploding, such as Hungary, Romania, and the Baltic states. You also have the issue of many of the struggling nations not employing the euro, but old Europe doesn't want to speed up the process to allow a Romania to adopt it. And with all this transpiring, a topic I've long brought up, xenophobia, is today increasingly rearing its ugly head, with the Roma, or gypsies, a standard target. There was a big incident in Hungary this past Monday where two Roma, a father and his 5-year-old son, were routed from their home, which had been set on fire, and then shot to death, the latest in a pattern of racially motivated crimes. 5,000 showed up at the funeral, and you talk about what must have been an emotional scene. Here is the Reuters account. Black-clad mourners wept, and when the coffin was lowered into the grave in the small hillside cemetery, the world-famous 100-member Gypsy Symphony Orchestra started to play. In Asia, there is no country in the world where opinion is more split than on China's prospects, with some, such as Chinese Premier Wen Jiabao, forecasting 8% growth, the benchmark, while others say growth will be minimal. The reason for the uncertainty has to do with the legitimacy of any official data. I was listening to a conference call this week for a China biodiesel company, not the one I own, and as I told a fellow investor who was also in on it, when dealing with these folks, you have to listen intently for the truth. Though I hasten to add, the greatest country on earth, us, has more than a few examples of its own of deceit of the highest order the past decade in particular. But back to China, for example, this operator of biodiesel said they were able to sell all of it that they could produce. I'm not sure I believe that, and the results haven't been audited as yet. So when we hear that China's own PMI index of manufacturing has risen 3 consecutive months, though still below 50, who the heck knows if a seemingly positive trend is really in place? The Chinese did admit that residential real estate is generally down 12 to 15% in value, depending on whether you are talking mass residential or luxury. In Japan, capital spending plummeted 17% in the fourth quarter, while next week it is expected that the government will revise Q4 GDP down to -3.3%, the worst level since 1974. Elsewhere, Malaysia's fourth quarter GDP came in at a disappointing up just 0.1%, while the Aussies unexpectedly revealed fourth quarter GDP declined 0.5%. Turning to the action on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is about to undergo a revamp with two components, Citigroup and General Motors, priced at the cost of a candy bar, being replaced shortly, and the S&P 500 traded at 12-year lows. The Dow finished down 6.2% to close at 66.26 after trading below 6,500 Friday afternoon and is now off 53% from its highs of October 2007. The S&P at 683 is 56% off its high of 1565. As if that's not bad enough, the S&P financials are now down 83%, surpassing the 82% decline of the S&P's prime tech index following the bursting of the tech bubble 2000 to 2002. And finally, Warren Buffett on the bond market. When the financial history of this decade is written, it will surely speak of the internet bubble of the late 1990s and the housing bubble of the early 2000s, but the U.S. Treasury bond bubble of late 2008 may be regarded as almost equally extraordinary. I have all kinds of information on the Obama housing plan at stocksandnews.com. Click on my Week in Review link. And we'll be back with you next Saturday. Have a great week.